It's the Score North Twin Show.
And welcome to a Tuesday with Trevor Plouffe edition of the Score North Twin Show. Here he is, fresh from spring break. He has a glow about him. The baseball season has started. He is fresh off vacation. How you doing, Trev? Coach Trev?
I'm doing great. I love the organ to the rock music. Like, it kind of got me going right there. I'm noticing right now on this camera, I do have a nice little glow. Thank you. That's the Florida sun right there, guys.
I was going to say, Trev, I love how when you guys start talking baseball, you guys both, everyone does a little guitar riff, the bum, 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 bum. I feel like that might be something we also now carry over.
We need the organ riff here.
The organ's the best. Going.
I think we need to do it live. One of you guys needs to get the organ, do it live, and just really, maybe you play a set during the show.
Check this out, you guys.
Yeah. Oh, the
Nancy
clinking.
Faust, the famous White Sox organist. She's one of the best of all time, has a bobblehead.
I love that.
Wait, one of the best of all time? Do you have your organ rankings all time?
That's a good point.
Your power
ranking?
Oh, God,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Josh Cantor in Boston is phenomenal.
Really have one. Okay.
Yes. Oh, he's great. You can tweet him or X him requests. He'll play them. He's phenomenal.
Will he go like pop music, kind of whatever you
anything
want?
Anything you want. Classical, pop. Sue Nelson, who plays the organ at Target Field, actually goes back to the North Stars days.
Oh, she was like a hockey arena organ player.
She was a hockey arena.
They make you work because it's like every face-off, right? It's everything.
Yep. It's a lot. Now they do play rock and roll a lot more canned, and baseball does too. But it used to be like you carried the day, right, Trev? I mean, the organ player carried the day at the ballparks.
I love the organ. I like it more than just like a DJ play on a song or something like that. The organ feels like a baseball game or a sporting event, I guess.
Yeah. My guy. That's actually my guy right there.
I have a dumb baseball question before we even get to our dumb baseball. And we'll talk Twins. Like Byron Buxton's back. The world is right. So we will talk Twins here. But what is your process for selecting walk-up music for the season? Like, how much time is spent on it? Do you consult other people? Like, what is that process?
I think a lot of different guys have different processes. I had a few songs I just liked that kind of put me, I felt like, in the right mindset. So I used Bone Thugs, which is like goes back to my childhood. And I really felt like it made me view the game like that. Like, hey, let's just go have fun. Let's go play like you were when you were a kid. And then I did it like a Led Zeppelin When the Levee Breaks. And that one kind of got me pumped up, like the drums and the guitar riff and everything. I thought that one was kind of more for the crowd and the other one was more for me.
The best was Willingham used two, which I always thought was brilliant.
Yes.
Because it mixes it up. So he used the Outfield Your Love.
Great song.
And Sweet Home Alabama. The worst was clearly Joe because he never changed it. It was T.I.
I'm going to clown Joe for that too. Yeah. And Joe never mixed it up.
And
never
the fact
mixed
that
it up.
You guys
Do you guys know Joe Mauer?
Yes,
don't you know who Joe Mauer is? That's exactly what you should expect from him.
Yeah.
But didn't you ever pull him aside and be like, Joe, got to mix it up, baby.
T.I., come on now.
We asked him, like, why'd you do it? And he just said, well, I did it one day and it worked. And I was like, that makes sense. Just keep doing it, Joe. Keep doing what you're doing, bro.
I can't hear what you know or basically any T.I. song without thinking of a slow walk from the dome or Target Field up to the batter's box. Like, that is just ingrained in so many Twins fans' memories that anytime they hear that song, they're just going to thank Joe Mauer.
Politely nod to the umpire and the catcher. Yep.
Played at Cooperstown. I want to hear what you know.
100% he has to. You know, there's the guy in Philadelphia, the second baseman, Bryson Stott. I don't even know the name of the song, but it's like a sing-along type song, like A-O, A-O-K. So I love that because that's for the crowd. Like, the song plays, and then even after the song is done, the crowd is still singing the song. So I think, you know, there's, like I said, you'd have one for you, but you should also have one, I think, for the crowd. And he does a great job of that.
I think you've nailed like a rule of thumb here that if you're singing, people get this wrong at karaoke bars too. You know, you're not there to just like sing a weird love song you get like your breakup song. You're there to entertain a bar, right? Like you're there to entertain a stadium. So if you're going to have your selfish song, you got to have a plan B that gets the stadium singing or riled up 100%.
There's nobody worse at a karaoke bar than the person that can actually really sing and they want to show you that they can actually really sing.
Right.
So they play some song like about,
Yes. If they don't, if they aren't looking at the lyrics machine, you might be in trouble because they're just trying to wow you. And it's like, yeah, I'm already sauced. I'm already drunk. You don't need to wow me. I just don't care. Let's have some fun.
I would have gone to a concert tonight. Yeah, if that was the case. So Trev, Twins are 2-1. It's funny how you get to your record sometimes. Like, it's a bad taste to get beat 11-0 on a Sunday, but at the end of the day, you win the series. Let's start with Byron Buxton here, because we don't know what the rest of the season is going to bring. We don't know if he's going to play 100 games or whatever, but for one weekend at least, we've all talked about this the last couple of days. He looks like he's back. He hits a bloop over the third baseman's head and dives into second base for a double, just like old times. So let's start with Buxton. What do you make of it, man?
Yeah, we watched that. I think it was a chopper off the plate or something like that that got over the third baseman's head. Yeah, yeah. And I actually brought my son Teddy over. I said, you got to watch this. Just watch this speed. And it was really cool to see him and Bobby Witt Jr. in the same series going at it, which hopefully we're going to see for quite some time. Those guys, like, I think that's why baseball was smart to kind of emphasize the stolen bases. I do think seeing speed is something that was undervalued for a long time. When you see someone run, not many people can run. Like, you're either born fast or you're not fast. Like, you can't teach that. You can't learn that. So, but going back to Buxton, yeah, it's really great to see him looking like comfortable at the plate, balanced at the plate, and he's just so dynamic. So yeah, if Byron's in the lineup, and I guess we'll get to Royce in a little bit, but if Byron's in the lineup doing that throughout the season, and I don't know how many games it's going to be or what it is, but whenever he's on the field, he can carry your team. And I think good teams have a guy like that that can carry a team when the rest of your offense is down, whether it's, you know, via stolen base or a hustle double like that, or he can hit the ball, you know, just as far as anybody in the ballpark. You can do it defensively. So having a guy like Byron that can do that, I think, is almost like an equivalent of having, you know, a stopper for a starting pitcher where, you know, you can rely on this guy. So it's been really fun to see him back out there doing his thing.
Trev, with that speed too. So like there are things about him, to your point, the power is great, but lots of guys have that. As a guy that played the game, and when you're playing against a very small group of guys that can do what Buxton can do with that speed, how much does he, for lack of a better term, wreck games for opponents? Because the one thing that's always stood out to me, like if you're at third or shortstop, Buxton hits a ball to you, ordinarily you're fine. You know, you got a strong arm, you throw the ball across, he's out. Buxton can be out by a step. Buxton can beat that throw. How much of a pain in the ass is playing against a guy like that based on those intangibles, which not a lot of guys share?
Yeah, I mean, it makes the margin for error nil. I mean, you can't... Ichiro was the same way. You get a ground ball from him and you better get rid of it. If you get a ground ball from Byron, everything has to be perfect. Your transfer has to be perfect. Your footwork has to be perfect. And you have to throw a strike and you can't lob it over there. So it just makes you have to be perfect on defense, which is very tough. I mean, it's when you have guys like, you know, Albert Pujols, so you know you can feel the ball, check your grip, take two shuffles towards first, throw the ball over there and he's going to be out. It's, you know, it makes the game a little bit easier. A guy like Byron puts you on alert. And I think even on that play, the chopper over the third baseman's head there, I know Byron's not going to bunt, like, very rarely, but you have to respect his speed with a guy in third base. If you do play back and you say, you know what, screw it, this guy's going for extra base hits and bunting's out of the game, whatever, he'll lay one down and that's in your mind. So you creep up a little bit and all of a sudden the chopper goes over your head. That's, There's a couple guys in the game that do that to you, especially as a third baseman. It gets tough. I remember doing it against Jose Altuve. Like, seemed like wherever I went to play, whether I played up, you know, he'd rip it past me. If I played back, he'd throw a bunt down. If I played on the line, he'd hit it in the six hole. If I played in the six hole, hit down line. Like, it just, guys like that, I think you hit it on the head. Like, the right term for that is create havoc on the baseball field. That's what Byron does.
Trev, I've loved what Byron's been able to do in just in the first few games. Obviously, playing center has been huge for him, not having just DH every single day. This is more of a long-term question, and I know, hey, if you had the actual answer for this, I'm certain you wouldn't be doing podcasts. You'd also be probably a hitting coach for a lot of teams, but Buck has always gotten off to really good starts the last few years, and then in May, kind of hit some adversity. Pitchers figure him out a little bit. He starts striking out a lot more. Is there something he can do to maybe like learn from that this time, where maybe, all right, I've gotten off to a hot start. I'm not going to have, you know, a 1.4 OPS throughout the entire season, but how can I still figure out to be a really good hitter at the plate once, you know, the book starts to come out a little bit after the first, you know, 20, 30 games of the season?
I want to challenge your first statement. I think I could be a hitting coach at the big league level. That's like one of the most thankless jobs, and the turnover rate is horrible. So that is not something that I'll ever try to do.
My guess is you probably have a much greater financial upside building mogul media companies than being a hitting coach riding around.
There's that aspect to it. I think you can make decent money there, but it's just a difficult job. I mean, you're answering. Usually, you have an assistant hitting coach. And if you're American like me, it's usually a Latin guy, and you kind of have to figure out how to get, you know, 12 to 13 guys ready on a daily basis. And everyone needs different things. You got to be in the case. It is a grind. So I think we all need to give hitting coaches more of an appreciation for what they do. The good ones are grinders.
We're very quick to like want to fire hitting coaches too.
Yeah, right? It's like, it's really not their fault. I mean, it's they do as much as they can. And I've been around teams like, I'll say this, you know, I've said this in open many times. I was in Tampa. We call him Motor down there. He's the hitting coach. I don't know what he did. Like, I didn't get any secrets from him. He didn't really help me out, but he produces great hitters year after year after year. And then you got guys like Tom Brunansky, who was just absolutely grinding every day in the cage. He's got the track record as a player, and he lasted how many years? What, two?
Yeah. Former weekly guest on the old Mackie and Judd radio show about 10 years ago. Too.
I love
great guest. He's a great guest.
Yeah, class guy.
For Byron, though, I mean, I think a lot of guys in April can get out to hot starts because the adrenaline is there and you just have this intense focus early on in the season. Everything is just feels so good. Your body's feeling good. So that's part of it for Byron 100%. Like, he needs to be able to maintain that as best he can, whether that's, I hate saying it, like scheduled off days and stuff like that. Like, you have to take care of the body. So you're feeling as good as you do in April, in September. That's a tall task, probably not going to happen, but you try to get it as close as possible. And then, you know, as you're saying, like, you know, you make adjustments, pitchers are going to make adjustments on you. What are you doing well? What part of the plate are you covering? What pitches are you covering? And the ones that you're not, and the places that you're not, they're going to start going to that. And you have to start making adjustments. And I think the biggest fault that hitters have is over adjusting. You can get into a place where, okay, I know I have to make an adjustment. Maybe I have a 2 or 3 game set where things aren't feeling right and I'm getting exposed on this pitch. So now what do I do? And you start forgetting what you're good at and you start trying to adjust to a pitch that you're not necessarily good at. I think you really have to hammer your strengths and then make small adjustments to either spit on those bad pitches and get yourself, you know, into better counts, or, you know, be able to cover them a little bit. I think when guys are consistent hitters, and this is probably the biggest telltale sign if you're going to be a consistent hitter in the big leagues, is how well you control the strike zone. Like, how many times can you get into hitters' counts, like, where you have the advantage? You know, the numbers are out there. If you're 0-1 constantly, you're going to be a hitter. There's just no way around it. So you have to find ways to control the strike zone. Micro adjustments, continue to hammer what you're good at, keep your routine, keep your body feeling fresh. So there's so many things. That's why it's so difficult to be a consistent hitter. That's why there's not many guys in the big leagues that hit 300 anymore. It's very difficult. So it's all those little things, and you have to manage them all, and kind of one will take precedent over the other throughout the year, and then you'll kind of mix the others in, and it's a dance, man. They call it a chess game, and it really is.
I've always wanted to, just along the lines of like hitter psychology and what it feels like when you're dialed in versus when you're not, which is, it's probably the hardest thing in sports. We talk about like, what are the hardest things in sports? Well, I don't know. A guy's throwing a rock 95 miles an hour with movement and then has the same arm motion and that ball comes out 11 miles an hour slower. Like, that's almost impossible for anyone. You had that crazy stretch in 2012 where you hit like 18 or 20 home runs in a 2 month. You were literally leading SportsCenter on some nights. You were performing at this crazy level. When a hitter, and speak to you specifically, what does that feel like when you're that dialed in at the highest level against the best pitchers in the world?
It seems easy. Your confidence level is at an all-time high. And that stretch in 2012 basically gave me my big league career. That's how crazy that is. I mean, that's gave me a starting job, and it really was, you know, the biggest moment of my career. You know, guys get locked in for a week at a time. I was kind of locked in for like, I don't know, 6 weeks there, like really, really locked in. But the feeling is that, yeah, it's just, it feels easy. You're not overthinking anything. You're not really focused on mechanics much at all. And it seems like, going back to the point I made earlier, it seems like you're in advantageous counts more often than not. Cause you're either fouling tough pitches off and spoiling good pitches, or you're taking those borderline pitches and getting the calls, and you just find yourselves in good counts. It just seems like it comes every, when you're going well, you find yourselves in 1-0, 2-0, 3-1 counts, like just so often. And some of that's your doing. Some of the times you just run into a group of pitchers who aren't, you know, throwing strikes, and they're getting behind. Like, it kind of, that happens both ways, but you just feel like the game's a little bit easier, and it's not anything you're doing in the cage. You're not working harder. You're not going home and studying more film. Like, you're still a human being and having dinners and, you know, doing things outside the field, but you just show up to the park and things are just a little bit different. And you can seem, when you're going the other way, it seems like a completely different world. You're always 0-1. You're getting behind the counts. You're not spoiling those. You're putting those tough pitches, instead of fouling them off, you're putting them into play, and you're out, you know, or you're not getting those borderline calls. So there's a lot of things that go into it, but the feeling is incredible. Like, I remember during that stretch, and it's still with me, and I don't have a great memory, to be honest with you. I really don't.
Yeah, I thought the hitting coach did a great job personally. I mean, you were fine.
Yeah, the hitting coach.
Joe
Varver, I was one of my favorite. He was like the ultimate grinder, so I will give him a lot of credit there.
Yeah.
I also was playing for my life at that time. Like, I don't know if you guys remember, like, Luke Hughes had gotten released. I was out of options and had never done anything worthwhile at the big league level. And I had just proposed to my wife. And I'm like, dude, I want to keep this girl around, I got to do shit.
He's like, if you don't have 20 home runs by the end of August, we're done, Trev.
You think I'm joking? I swear that was in my mind. I was down. Like, it's freaking, I couldn't get sent down. So I would have been released.
Yeah.
Like, there's sometimes when you have options, you get sent down. You're like, all right, fine. I still am on the 40 man roster. I could not get sent down. And I literally was going to the park, and I found myself, you know, getting some starts because there's some injuries. And I was like, I need to do something, you know, so. That was a massive part of my big league career. But yeah, it's the feeling of being locked in and not locked in. It's insane, the difference.
It's got to be so weird too, because one is like, you don't really change as a person or player, and it goes from, and that's the thing about sports that intrigues me so much, Trevor, is how much of it is mental. Like, you get in zones where it's going great, and then you get in zones where it's not. And, you know, you see guys, especially like, Buck is a perfect example. Think about all the times early in his career that dude changed his stance on a whim Hunter told me this, the hitting coach told me this, and you know, now it's a leg kick, now it's not. And I sympathize with him. But to me, it's like, dude, you have so much natural talent, and this is clearly mental now. Like, you are in your own head constantly. I go back to, and I think you were with the Twins at this point in time. Were you there for the Memorial Day game against the Rangers when Aaron Hicks came in and told Gardy that he was done trying to switch hit?
Yes, I remember that.
And so
you Darvish on the mound?
You Darvish was on the mound, and Gardy played him. and Hicks came back after the fact and said, I almost died because I hadn't hit right-handed against a right-hander forever.
Yeah. Not the guy that you want to try it really first against, by the way.
But, I mean, I still remember it vividly because like, big leaguers don't do this.
Looks like that ball's coming at your head. Oh, God.
Yeah. You know, with Byron, and I feel like we had some similar experiences, you know, when you struggle at the big league level or just in general in baseball, you're searching. A lot of times it's your first time you ever struggled in the game. Like, when I got to minor league baseball, you know, up until then, I had been an excellent player at every single level. And when you first struggle, some guys are like, okay, a massive adjustment. And then if that one doesn't make, I got to make an even bigger adjustment. What do I got to do? And there's so many coaches, you know, throughout the minor leagues, you're going to get dozens of coaches telling you different things. And like, there's not always great coaches in the minor leagues. That's the dirty little secret. Yeah. I don't want to blow anybody up, but like, I didn't have great coaches. I think they're a lot better with that now. I think they're really thinking about player development so much more than they were before. A lot of times it was like, who really wants these jobs because they're not paying anything. And it's, you're in a bad city, and it's like almost like a lot of baseball lifers were the coaches. I think it's a little bit different now. The technology is different. The facilities are a little bit better. But you know, you're searching, you just want to be a good player. And that's what Byron is. Byron's a coachable guy. So it's not a bad thing, but it can turn into a bad product on the field if you're continuously changing your stance. And I remember having that conversation with Byron, and he's like, man, like, I just feel like I've been going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And he's like, I want to be myself and I want to be athletic. And I said, Byron, you should never, ever not be athletic. Like, that is your calling card. You're the most athletic person on the field at any given moment. Like, just be that way. And I actually had the same exact conversation with Matt Chapman last night. I went to the Dodger game. They're playing the Giants last night. And he told me he had a great offseason. I said, what'd you do? And he said, well, I would mess with the toe tap last year. And then I got in. I felt like I wasn't athletic in the box. And I said the same thing to him. I said, dude, like, you're like the most athletic guy in the field whenever you play. If you watch that guy play third base, it's incredible. And he said, I just went back to feeling athletic in the box. And I think a lot of guys run through the gamut of mechanics and I got to do this. And my coach told me to do this. And then eventually it usually does come back to, let's just feel comfortable and let's let my athleticism take over. And I think that's what we've seen with Byron.
Yeah.
Yes, and this isn't the case, obviously, with Royce Lewis. Trev, kind of turning the page over to Royce, who homers in the first at-bat, and everywhere he goes, the dude just rips the cover off the ball, and poor guy's been through ACL tears and hamstrings and obliques, and now it's a quad. Just how much does that, like, stink, too, when you see your star player who has – obviously, I saw the great interview with Chris Rose, your buddy, a few weeks ago, where his main objective is just to shut everyone up about the injury history, and then, unfortunately, this dude – obviously hurts his quad significantly enough where they're probably gonna be without him for at least a couple months of 2024.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bummer because he is, not only is he a great baseball player, I mean, this, and I think he really is like a great baseball player. I think he could be like a top 10 guy in the league type baseball player. He's got that ability to do that, but he's a phenomenal person and works hard and wants everyone to succeed. And he's, you don't get those guys all the time that have both. I feel like the Twins have kind of been lucky there where they've had guys that with immense talent, but also great character. And maybe that's a point of emphasis, you know, in drafting guys and trading for guys. And in fact, I've, you know, definitely talked to some guys that say that they're really trying to make sure they do that. But I think that's the biggest thing is you just feel for him because you know the amount of work he puts in, you know, the kind of person he is and the talents there. And these things are just out of his control. There's nothing that he did wrong to pull the quad. He's not going out on benders and staying up all night and not hydrated. I mean, there are some guys that you can point to that. And Royce is not one of those guys. Mm-hmm. He does everything the right way. And sometimes, you know, your soft tissue doesn't cooperate, essentially. And it's there's just not a quick fix for that. I don't know what the answer is with Royce. I just feel for him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the good news is if they've got some depth and if you can find something in Austin Martin, I know Brooks Lee's out for a few weeks with an injury, but like if one of those guys can pop, if Byron Buxton's going to be in the lineup on a regular basis in the old buck, you should be able to withstand it. So I guess we'll just have to see. We have some dumb baseball questions, at least one or two that we want to throw at you before. Okay. The end of the episode here. A shout out to our friends at Nicolay Law, the official exclusive personal injury. Good segue, I guess, with the Royce Lewis thing. Law firm of the Score North Twin Show here. So you probably see billboards around the Twin Cities. Nicolay Law is proud to serve the Twin Cities community. They're just your normal everyday folks, the ones you see at the gas station, walking the dog, or at your local watering hole. They're just normal folks who happen to have law degrees, and they're here to help you when an unexpected accident occurs. Give them a call at 1-855-NICOLAY or go to nicolaylaw.com. That's nicolaylaw.com. And we encourage anyone and everyone to send us and Trevor in the YouTube comment section on the brand new Score North Twin Show YouTube channel your dumb baseball questions. We will not shame you. At least I won't, but Trevor might shame you. I don't know.
I will not. So, I love dumb baseball questions. I do.
Yeah. We're all looking to raise our level of baseball awareness here. So we've had this from a few different people. So we'll throw it out there just on behalf of the audience. What is the most common way a pitcher tips his pitches, Trev?
There's so many ways. And I went and watched Bailey Ober start because that was kind of a
thank you.
maybe why this question got brought up. I didn't see anything. I really didn't. And, you know, there were some broken bats and Sal made a good swing on a changeup. I looked at the glove. I think to answer the question is the glove. Yeah, flaring the glove, closing the glove, where it's, you know, where you come set here, here. If a guy has a preset grip on a ball, which a lot of guys that throw big changeups or splitters do, you know, then you can look at the forearm, like, you know,
are they digging in there, right?
Yeah, the forearm changes. You can see it wiggling a little bit, some of the veins and stuff like that. So there's a lot of things you can look at. I went and looked over the footage, and I really didn't see anything with Beal. I think it was just an unfortunate start, and that's kind of it. But it's something that hitters are constantly looking at. And now it's not just the hitters, which I think kind of sucks, is like we got people and possibly – haven't seen it, but I'm assuming it's around software doing this for teams. Like, how easy would that be to just put a software program and
AI pitch tip bot?
I'm just assuming that's going on. I really have not seen that anywhere. I think that should be illegal. I think that only players and coaches that are on field coaches should be able to do that. But how do you police that? You can't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what crosses the line? Because it feels like since the Astros thing, that there has been pushback on like sign stealing, which is done from second base, which I've always thought is great. I mean, Molitor is a genius at that stuff.
Yes.
Like he's that's incredible. Yeah. So, but I mean, to me, that's an art. That's not Bush League. That's not illegal. So like, where is the line crossed? Because I feel like all sign stealing now is publicly frowned upon when that's a large part of gamesmanship. And I admire that.
I don't think any of it should be frowned upon, except if you point a camera at the freaking catcher's fingers on a live feed and relay. Like that's not okay. And then I'll say also, like, I don't think people that aren't on the field, uniform personnel, should be able to do stuff to get signs. I just think it has to be the team. That's my biggest take on this. But if you're at first base and you can see the catcher signs and you can read an off-speed pitch is coming and you steal second base, that's fair game. If you're on second base and nobody uses fingers anymore because they have pitch comm.
Yep.
But before, when a pitcher or a catcher was giving a sequence and you figured it out and you went and told the boys and you're relaying signs, that's fair game. Like everything to me is fair game except for using technology to do it. If it's your eyes and you're on the field, everything is fair game.
Did you guys hear or see the story about the Sunday night baseball game? Kiki Hernandez is playing third base. He's mic'd up. And of course, now they're talking to him because
and
he's got the pitch comm in and he can't hear the pitch comm because he's got the mic ear thing in to talk and he turns up the pitch comm. And so they're talking and you can hear three change up outside.
Yeah, change up. Yep. That's awesome. You can hear it clear as day on the broadcast. Yes. I saw that. Yeah.
So do all the infielders have the pitch comm speaker so they can hear, or
they do now? That I think that's a new thing, whether it was this year or last year. Previously, I believe there was, I think there's only a certain amount you can have on the field. I don't think the outfielders are allowed to have them, but I think maybe it's pitcher, catcher, the center fielder can as well.
Yep, but the corner guy.
Then maybe everybody can have them now. I actually don't know the rule on that. There was a limit in previous years, and now I think maybe everyone can just have it. Which I don't like it, man. I just
were
can't.
You, but like as a shortstop, were you leaning in to see what the sign was so of you course. Knew what pitch? So that was so you
have
as a shortstop, you need to know what way to shade or whatever, right?
The middle infielder, second base, and shortstop you have to see the pitch, and then you give a little. To the third baseman or the first baseman, depending on what side of the ball you're on. And that, you know, that was how we used to do it. And I feel like that's very much like part of the game. And now we've just eliminated that completely. And, you know, I understand it, I guess, a little bit, but it just, I don't want to, and I never want to be like the old guy that's like back in my day, but
here we are.
For some reason, I just can't
get off my lawn.
Here I am. I don't know why. Pitchcom doesn't do it for me. Everyone likes it though. Everyone in the game likes it, so I'm on board with it.
But obviously, like, you know, your son is playing baseball too, right? They're not going to implement this quite yet, but the whole idea of it to me is just like mind blowing. So when do you start implementing it into youth baseball? Like where does it?
We need electronic strike zones in youth baseball too. I think all of it should be in youth baseball. Quite frankly,
it's getting that way, man. Youth baseball is a mess right now. My son's doing some travel ball. It's kind of like a lesser version than I think a lot of people do. It's just guys from our area. I like the coaches. It's not like a academy or anything like that. But we go and play these games, and there's some of these teams. It's like, come on, man. Oh, travel ball, by the way, is not what it used to be. Here I am again. Get off my
wow.
Lawn.
How old are
everybody
you
plays travel ball now?
58-year-old Trevor here.
Yep. Every kid plays travel ball now. So it's like it's not even like, you know, it used to be like those were the best players, and you played just in your players. You played in your rec league or your okay. little league or pony right. league.
Go play your home.
And then
home
you
league,
also yeah. played, and now it's just we had a mass exodus from our league, and that's why I took Teddy and put him on this team, because so many players left to go on these travel teams. The competition was bad, like so bad. I was like, this is, I don't even want to be here watching this. So like, I'd rather him just do the travel ball thing.
Yeah, no, this is not fit like Teddy's path to the big leagues here. We need some better competition. I'm with you. If you want to do like a separate side podcast where we just document this, I'm in, by the way.
Just Teddy's
off my lawn.
Path to Teddy's the big path leagues. To the big leagues. Teddy's yeah. Let's make it happen.
What we need is a segment on this show, Trevor Plouffe's Get Off My Lawn of the Week.
Yes.
Get off my lawn of the week. Come on, you're getting older. Come on.
There's only a few things that I'm adamant about. I hate pitchers throwing at hitters. I think that's just stupid.
Just saw that.
But I guess that's more new school. So that's like that's opposite of get off my lawn.
Yeah, guys get super offended and then throw a rock at someone yeah. else's body at 98 well, miles an hour. It's like,
you really want to get me fired up on this show, just start talking to me about starting pitchers and the stupid stuff that they do. That's where I'll just go off. I don't care.
Notes made here. Yeah.
Play the Mets thing was crap day. Though. The Mets thing was crap. Hoskins had a great day, and then they decide to get even for the previous day. That's BS. Man.
Yeah, it's just it was silly. Look, if you're gonna hit a guy, there's ways to do it. You have to hit him below the belt. You know, you can brush a guy back too. You don't have to hit him.
Right.
But don't bring your reliever who has notorious control issues that throws 97 and then say, hey, go hit this guy. Because guess what's gonna happen? He doesn't know where the ball's going. And it's if that ball hit Reese in the head, what's Carlos Mendoza feeling like? What's Jeff McNeil feeling like? Like, you're going to feel like the biggest piece of you know what. And it's just, there's no place for that in the game. Reese, the slide was a tad late, I guess you could say. Completely legal.
It was fine.
Okay, I'm going to say this right now. Our guy John Boy is putting out a video today. And it's about the Mets mainly and what they do when they're trying to break up a double play. It's insane.
Wow.
I don't know if they don't know the rule or what they're teaching. Just look out for that video.
And that's dropping on the John Boy YouTube channel, I'm guessing, sometime today. And on John Boy Twitter.
It's crazy what he found. And he was just looking for Jeff McNeil sliding into second base. And he went down a rabbit hole. And it's gonna blow people's minds.
Inject it. Nice. By the way, if you want more of Trevor, you can find him on Talking Baseball. All this under the John Boy media umbrella, Baseball Today. You're also going to be doing, do you know when your first Bally Sports North stuff is going to be? Is it when they go out west?
Yes, I'll get it up right now. It is the Angels series, which is April 26th will be my first game. That's in LA. And then I'll follow the team or I'll travel with the team to Chicago. So,
all right.
Nice.
Two Let's series go. In a row.
Well, Trevor on Bally's. Make Beautiful. It happen. Awesome stuff, Coach Trev.
Thank you.
There he is. Thanks for coming on, dude.
See ya.
Appreciate it. I'll see you guys, next Tuesday?
Mm-hmm. Trevor Plouffe, yes, Tuesdays here on the Score North Twin Show. We'll see you guys.